Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy. Recording is 1:26 PM. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 8th. There was plenty to talk about today. A lot of it was headline making, but didn't have a great impact on prices. One thing, for example, over the weekend, it's looking increasingly likely that the Chinese are going to further clamp down on Hong Kong. Any prospect of any kind of democratically elected official is being stamped out. It would appear that there's only a matter of time before the Hong Kong dollar ceases to exist. And the Hong Kong dollar has been trading in this narrow band now for decades. And it was at the upper side of the band until quite recently. It looks quite likely that it will trend back towards the higher side of the band, or the lower side of the band from the Hong Kong dollar's perspective. When we then just look at that over the very long term, there is obviously the scope that they will just simply replace the Hong Kong dollar with the renminbi. That would be a very easy way to internationalize the currency and stamp the any kind of independence movement out of Hong Kong. So that's certainly something that's on the horizon. There, of course, was also the fact that the renminbi itself was quite weak today. And it has now, the dollar has broken out of this two-month range. It's the highest level it's been at nearly all year. So this is looking like the potential here for a reversion back towards the mean. And it was a green light for some selling pressure in the CSI 300. It was down in a dynamic manner and now rapidly unwinding its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. It was also quite clear that some of the biggest decliners in the USA today were some of the Chinese firms. So Baidu, for example, had done spectacularly well between November and February, and now it's unwound at least half of that advance and not much sign that it's over yet. When we think about Alibaba, then it's a similar story. The company had been doing very well. Now it's got a lower high and it is encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean and continuing to pull back as well. Then, of course, when we think about what was happening in Saudi Arabia, we had an attack on the Saudi oil fields again. And in fact, the oil price was down, despite the fact that we have this increase in geopolitical tensions in one of the most politically sensitive places in the world. Oil prices fell back by over a dollar. I think it is worth considering that when we look at the horizontal rotary rig count, then high prices encourage drilling, and drilling fell off a cliff in 2020. If we had to think about one reason why oil prices were able to rebound in such an emphatic fashion, it's because of the massive shutdown of drilling operations in the USA. And as that figure recovers, so will supply. As we get up and think about the longer term potential for oil prices, it's not like anyone has to go out into the world and find new oil. Everybody knows where the oil is. It is really only a question of price. And when the price can be hedged, then the drilling will start. And that is true of unconventional onshore supply in the USA, whether that is then also in the offshore sector. We have to remember that a lot of the offshore drilling companies basically went bust. If you think about Seadrill, for example, they have massive assets in terms of drilling equipment for offshore, just sitting idle, not an awful lot going on. They've been in and out of bankruptcy. And the share price has been bumbling along now for the last few months. It really does require a higher oil price to encourage this kind of more expensive supply back into the market. And if prices rise, it will come back into the market. That's pretty good news. It means that we're unlikely to see energy price inflation being a problem. One thing that has been clear over the last number of decades is that every time oil prices spike higher, well, then it contributes to a recession. So we just don't believe, at least I don't believe, that that's likely in this scenario. There is a lot of supply that has just not on the market that could easily be brought to bear. But the thing that is animating investor interest right now is government bond yields. It's not simply that the U.S. 10-year is up to 1.6%, but it's that we have this commonality right across the boards. The 10-year gilt is up to about 75 basis points. It has paused around the 80 basis point level, but this is a clear breakout from a well-defined range, and it suggests that there is still scope for upward pressure. Then when we think about the Australian 10-year, it had also broken out of a well-defined trading range, and we're getting some pause and consolidation in the region of the upper, lower side of the overhead trading range and the psychological 2% level, but we're looking at renewed economic growth. That's one of the primary reasons why gilts and Australian bonds, Canadian bonds, and US bonds are all declining. It's because of economic growth. And then we have this interesting bifurcation in the performance of the Dow, for example, which hit a new all-time high, although did give up that advance in the latter portion of the session. And we look at the NASDAQ, and it is pulling back and was in sharply negative territory. Now, the clear point here is that the NASDAQ is loaded with companies that are highly interest rate sensitive. And when interest rates go up, it's not an esoteric event. Everything is priced off the 10-year. It's the primary discount rate for ascertaining value. When we think about value then as its performance relative to growth, which is characterized by technology, then this has been a clear breakout. This looks like a trend that has legs. So now the big question is, how much further is the decline in government bond yields, or in government bond prices, going to go? And so far, there's not a lot of evidence that it's over. Even though we have a short-term oversold condition, there is still potential that yields are going to continue to rise, because the thing that has helped to compress yields over the course of the last decade has been the willingness of central banks to wade in and buy every single time there has been a wobble. We're really only at the beginning of the wobble in the NASDAQ, and the price is now coming back to test the region of the trend mean and the upper side of the underlying range. We've seen a number of these types of companies that are the largest companies in the world breaking down. And Amazon, it could have found support in the region of the 3,000 level. There's not a lot of evidence to suggest that it is doing it today. When we think about the performance of companies like Nvidia, it was one of the best performers in 2020, and it was also among the best performers. I think it was the best performing share in 2016 and 17, 2 years in a row. That's extraordinarily unlikely. Most of the time, a company does extremely well 1 year and less well the next year. And Nvidia then did not much of anything in 2019, but it took off in 2020. And now it is breaking downwards. When we look at the semiconductors index, then this is also pulling back here. So we're looking at investors pricing in the potential for growth to return, but also pricing in interest rate sensitivity. That is most particularly true when we look at, for example, Zillow. Zillow is a company that should do well from rising home prices and increasing activity, and there has certainly been a big uptick in activity in terms of the real estate market. But It's also worth remembering that Zillow also got into the business of lending and trying to buy houses cheap and then turn them over for a profit. So it got into the flipping business. And that opens it up to carry. So when you've got zero interest rates, then you don't have to worry about the carry. But if you're borrowing and then you expect to sell your acquisition in 6 to 9 months, well, then you're exposed for that 6 to 9 months. And if interest rates rise, well, then the cost of performing that activity rises with it. And if your entire business model is based on slim margins, then that's obviously going to have an effect. It's very similar to what's happening with the solar sector. Solar is continuing to unwind its overbought condition. It's coming back down towards the trend mean, but it's extremely interest rate sensitive. When we think about companies like Sunrun, these are the kinds of highly levered companies that do extremely well in a low interest rate environment, and then their business model comes under extraordinary stress as interest rates rise. And that's exactly what we're seeing right now. The interest rate sensitivity of large portions of the market, I don't think can be overstated, and it will have a knock-on effect for the wider asset classes. So when we then look at how the performance of other assets are doing, well, we had a significant rebound in Europe in here today. The DAX index was up about 3%, and that is a clear breakout to new highs. Now, when we think about what is animating that move, well, the weakness of the euro is certainly a factor. So the export sector in Europe has been troubled by the persistent strength of the euro. Now the euro is right in the region of the trend mean. So it's a big question whether we're going to see it bouncing from this area, and how much further will the dollar's rally go. The dollar is obviously pricing in the fact that economic growth is coming in stronger. The interest rate differential in favor of the dollar is certainly improving right now in terms of the yield, if not the base inflation rate, or excuse me, interest rate. And then when we look at the yield curve, well, U.S. banks should see profit margins improve, and a healthy banking sector is certainly attractive. Then the yield curve is certainly pushing higher and up to 143 basis points. So this is certainly beneficial for any company that can lend short or lend long and borrow short term. When we think about the banking sector overall, it continues to do well, and it was at another new recovery high in here today. I don't anticipate that these reflation candidates are going to go up in isolation. The sheer size of the technology sector as a proportion of the wider market, it will have a knock-on effect for ETFs, and the size of these markets is really quite profound. Then we can also think about some of the emerging markets. The Brazilian market is, I think, rather interesting at this stage. We have commodity prices that are rising, which should generally be better for Brazil. But they also have their pandemic variant that is looking at, or is represents a significant challenge for the economy. So the real is now breaking downwards. When we then think about how are these industrial metals likely to perform? Well, we've had a big move. What it suggests is that perhaps we're going to see some additional consolidation in the industrial metals sector, that will drive down some of the commodities currencies, like the Brazilian real or perhaps the South African rand. When we eventually do start to see the recovery coming through in the industrial resources sector, it'll probably set up a buying opportunity in some of these emerging markets. I've been quite conscious of the fact that I have been giving less commentary on some of the emerging markets. It's because I've been more concentrating on the precious metals sector and on the cryptocurrency markets and also on Wall Street because of this interest rate question. I do think that what's happening in interest rates is by far the most important thing out there. When the dollar does roll over, then it will create a buying opportunity in the emerging markets because people will go back in search of growth. But right now we're pricing in the potential that growth comes back in a more in a quicker manner than many people are willing to give credence to. And the fact that gold is continuing to decline, it was down another almost $19 in here today, this is a clear acceleration of the trend. It had pulled back and found support at $1,900, then pulled back and found it at $1,800. On each of those occasions, it rebounded by more than $100. This time, it paused for a while at $1,700, has not rebounded. It's certainly becoming more oversold, but we don't have any evidence yet that this decline is over. Silver prices have been really very inert, but they were in negative territory today, although not in nearly as dynamic a manner. It's just about unwound and overbought condition relative to the trend mean. It will be interesting to see whether silver can maintain this relative strength overall. I do have a doubt as to whether that is a permanent condition against a background where silver or where gold is quite weak. And platinum has begun to steady around the 1100 level. I remain rather vigilant of the outlook for palladium. I do think that it is very susceptible to additional weakness because it is quite likely that anyone who is playing the argument for the triumph of batteries over the internal combustion engine will look on the platinum-palladium ratio as an attractive vehicle for doing that. And it is now above the trend mean for the first time since really there was a brief time in 2018. Before that it was 2016. And palladium prices are extremely high relative to history on both a nominal and a relative basis. When we then think about what we can anticipate, well, what happens in China and in terms of their liquidity is going to be one of the big factors in global liquidity. We have to remember that capital is global and mobile, and a lot of money has flowed into China. That has helped, and it's been encouraged into China because of the relative yield advantage. And at 3.25%, it's still well above what is prevailing in the USA. But that was on the basis of a strong renminbi. The renminbi is now broken downwards, so there could easily be a flight out of the Chinese government bond markets and into other asset classes. If we're looking at clear reflation, then obviously there will be a threat to some of the companies that did particularly well during the pandemic, because on the one hand, many of them are highly levered, so they are struggling under higher interest rates and higher yields. On the other, they have been able to pull forward earnings from way in the future. And I've seen people talking about getting 3 years' worth of sales in a single year. And that's pretty much impossible to replicate in 2021, particularly as the economies of the world open back up. So the clear beneficiaries in 2020 are unlikely to benefit in 2021. On the other hand, it is going to be the companies that did so or really were on survival mode in 2020 are most heavily levered to a global reflation. And the global reflation certainly looks like where we are indeed going. So when we think about the CRB index, it is now right in the region of 200. It's had a 100% rebound from the lows back in March. We are definitely due some consolidation. obviously, there are big questions being asked about what's going to happen with all the debt. And the answer is that they're going to push for growth at all costs. They're going to try and grow and inflate their way out of debt problems. That is as true of Europe and the UK, Australia, Canada, and the USA. The simple fact of the matter is that every country in the world wants reflation. So there is going to be low interest rates for a prolonged period, and growth is likely to come in faster than many people anticipated, for the simple reason that we are social animals, and when people have been cooped up for so long, they crave social contact, and that means more activity. One thing that was particularly clear, we were out at a mall yesterday, and it was heaving with people in Los Angeles, and that is something we haven't seen in quite a long time. So it's certainly true that people want to get out. They want to go out and see other people engaging in social activity. Even if everyone is still wearing masks and being very cautious, there is this craving for social contact. And I think that that is something that is being underestimated by many people. It suggests that this pop in interest rates is bringing forward a whole argument. And this argument, of course, is at what point are we going to talk about what is going to be required to repay all of these debts? I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.